Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. My dog and I this is Elizabeth, your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful. Today, I'm bringing you something really interesting, and I just had to cover this because I'm a print lover. For the first time, there's going to be the Santa Barbara Art Book and Print Fair. And it's been organized by a body of wonderful artists, and we've got four of them here today to talk to us a little bit about what they do. But just a little bit, it's only one day, so it's November the 16th from 11 to 6 at the Community Arts Workshop on Garden Street, and it is not to be missed. There's, I think, around 60 visiting artists that are going to be doing demonstrations, talks, and when we're not talking just coffee table books here or, you know, this art books. We're not talking that. We're talking really innovative print stuff. And so you guys are going to see apparel. You're going to see zines. You're going to see posters and art prints as well. And it's going on, like I said, 11 to 6 at the Community Arts Workshop, one day only, November 16th. And it's called Off Register. And what is so interesting about that is they are bold enough to include a whole section of items that were mistakes. And I think that is really, really interesting. You can also, there's going to be demonstrations and workshops. There's going to be screen printing and graphic art workshop. There's going to be all sorts of things to do. If you're creative, this is something for you. And I want to introduce our wonderful panel today. I have with us Garrett Gerstenberger, and I always pass Garrett. He's the owner of High Desert Print Company, and he's a president at Island View Outfitters. He started printing t-shirts out of his college student garage in Isla Vista in 2008. It was a small idea then. After 15 years, the business developed into a community staple and a prominent supplier for decorative apparel and design. Island View Outfitters is a retail brand that personifies the love of the Central Coast through local inspired designs, and High Desert Print Company is the custom division where the production facility is found roots in the small rural town on the other side of the Los Padres Forest, and chosen with passion for social enterprising, investment in rural communities, and helps contribute in the efforts of job creations and investments in the arts. So Garrett's studio, I always see it when I pass De La Vina and State Street, and I always wondered what Garrett does in there, and the two names that are on the window, and what those two names mean, and how they interrelate, and now we kind of know. Hello, Garrett. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be on the show here, and happy to talk. Thanks for
Excellent.
The intro.
Kestrel was the first one here, artist, printer, and founder of, I just think this is just the, first of all, she's got a beautiful name, Kestrel Tseng, and she's a Canadian-Taiwanese illustrator, graphic designer, and printer. Because her name is Kestrel, I think, that's Bird in the Hand Press, and it's just, there's a wonderful little logo, and just, she's so interesting. Go online and take a look at what she does. Fascinating and really creative. She operates Bird in Hand Press. It's a risograph print shop, and I want to know more about what that is. It's located here in Santa Barbara. She's received her BFA from Arts Center College of Design. She's a certified ARISM print technician, and she provides technical and educational services to the RISO programs at Santa Barbara City College, the University of California, Santa Barbara, UCSB College of Creative Studies, and Santa Barbara High School, and other creative and educational institutions. And so Kestrel's here. Hello, Kestrel.
Hello. Thank you for having me today.
Sure. And I find out, it's interesting because I find out that Garrett and Kestrel their studios are very close to each other. And so Kestrel said when she didn't see Garrett, I got to run down the hall. And so,
yeah.
Dez is here, and Dez Alanzes, is I'm pronouncing your last name right?
Alaniz.
Alaniz. Oh, that's even prettier. Yeah. Dez Alaniz, and she is a, how do you say this, Zinster or Zinester?
I go with Zinster.
Okay. She's a Zinster, an educator, and she is here in Santa Barbara, and they create zines.
As long as you make them.
That's right. As Macho Queen, and they're the founder of Honey Boy Press, and that is a zine distro, also things I don't know, founded in Santa Barbara in 2019, and she's actually been very forward on the front lines of making zines into the documents that they should be, and I find out that she's a professional archivist of those zines, and she is very interested in building archive libraries. She's taught with archives. She is into non-traditional publishing, and she presently also works at the Presidio Research Center. And I have to say, Des, I'm an appraiser, and a number of people have come to me because they've lost their archives, for example, in some of the fires. So I've worked all throughout California and Oregon because of the fire issues. When I started in this business 20 or so years ago, our whole archives weren't worth much, and people were just sort of tossing them, or, you know, my grandfather kept this, you know, whole archive, and I just don't know what to do with it. And we were trying to, in my early years, beg universities to take advantage and you know, not necessarily buy, but at least accept these archives for donations, personal archives I'm talking about. And now there's a number of dedicated archival dealers and appraisers. I work with one on the East Coast who regularly sells marvelous archives to the Bancroft, for example. And right now we were working on the archives of an entire county that burnt, the repository burnt down, Plumas County. So all of Plumas County archives, it's early gold rush area. That whole archive from that era, mid-19th century, is gone. And we're trying to piece together what the value was of such a thing. And the value is cultural, but it's also monetary. And they're really closely interrelated. It's like no other area of material that I look at. Super interrelationship. So when I was looking into your background, I was like, wow, the kindred spirit, because, yeah, I'm an archive lover myself. I want to also introduce Owen to the group. And Owen Jenkins is with us. And Owen, his background is so interesting. Everybody here is so interesting. But Owen's, let me get to that page. Owen, where are you, Owen? He is a cartoonist. There he is. He's a cartoonist. And I was looking at his work, and it's wonderful. Just wonderful. He's a cartoonist and artist. His zines and illustrations meld the aesthetics of musical subcultures, poetry, and underground comics, binding them into experimental, surreal narratives. He graduated from UCSB in 2024, degree in studio art and art history. And his work has been exhibited in museums and galleries, et cetera. And when you say, I mean, you guys have to take a look at it. When Owen is describing his work as surreal, it almost is a narrative structure in itself. I mean, I found it really cohesive. And I've never seen anything like it, Owen. I was so glad to have the time to look into what you do. I've introduced everybody. So I want to start off, first of all, Des, I want you to tell us what Zine Distro is.
So a zine distro is like a hub for distributing zines. We got lots of little like, you know, catchphrases and stuff like that, but that's essentially what a zine distro does. There are many zine distros that are set up essentially for folks to send their completed zines to a zine distro, and then that distro will make the call on whether they want to make it available on their website or at Zine Fest. So what I do with Honey Boy Press is I make a lot of the zines myself, but I also work with my friends and fellow schemers to make zines and distribute them. So I'm in the position where I actually get to like work closely with the folks that I'm making zines with, which is awesome. And so that's a definitely a feature of the way that I kind of do approach the distro work.
So Richard, let's go to quick break. And we're celebrating off register the Santa Barbara Art Book and Print Fair, November 16th, one day, 11 to 6, at the Community Arts Workshop on Garden Street. So don't turn that dial, back in a minute.
Our aspirations wrapped up in books. Our inclinations hidden in looks.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. And Richard, where did I lose you? Oh, I don't know. We went to break early, I think. Okay. So I would like Owen to talk a little bit about what is a book, because looking at his website, it was so interesting to see. He's got a counterculture approach that I think would work well if I ask him this question. So Owen, can you talk to me, what's a book?
Sure, Elizabeth. Thank you for having me on the show. As that blurb described, which I love, I'm not sure who wrote that. I'm excited about that panel too. A book could be many things, and I think it's helpful to think of it in that poetic, expansive way. I make books in a more traditional sense. My zines are pretty book-like, more book-like than an almond or a building or the deepest part of a pool. But I've worked in libraries, doing book restoration and taking classes at the College of Creative Studies on bookmaking. So I really love how books are put together. And I think zines are a great way for me to combine the sort of more interesting, maybe experimental forms of bookmaking with these traditional forms of, as you say, like countercultural zine culture, like that stem from kind of punk and DIY scenes.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, the DIY and that culture, that sort of, you know, because you just graduated this past year, and I can remember. So just a little background, the gentleman who invented the software that led to the movement of the comic characters, for example, on The Simpsons, and you know, that, what was that, that other early show where, is it South Park, where the characters kind of bounced. So he developed the software to make them move. And this was in the 80s. And this was when, you know, there was a clear demarcation between what is a comic character and what is not. And it is not that way anymore. I mean, basically, looking at your work, I was struck by the fact that, yeah, they're comic characters, but they're not. They're, you know, they're works of fine art as well. So that was super impressive to me. I want to ask also about another panel discussion that's going to come up. It's called New Life in the Public Domain. And I wonder if Garrett can talk about that a little bit, because, you know, what he does is he does some commercial work. You know, some of his pieces are beautiful, but they're commercial work. Some of the T-shirts and the hats, but they're beautifully artistically done. And I wonder, what is the difference between the commercial world and, like we're saying, public domain, Garrett?
That's a good question. I would love to know more myself. I'm actually on the 12 p.m. Panel discussion with art and entrepreneurism. But I mean, in essence, I think, you know, anything in the public domain, you know, I think the notion of just making things and putting them out there in the world for people to see is, I think, an interesting space. You know, I'm on the kind of print commercial side. It's my business I've done forever. But what I find interesting in this kind of like intersect of art and business is this ability to have to kind of be vulnerable and not just like provide a service, but be able to create something that has, you know, purpose and some emotion to it and deliver it. And since everything that we do is very interpretive, there's an art process to it. And it's not just, you know, you press a button and it spits out. Putting ourselves out there is somewhat vulnerable for us. So there's been a, you know, over 15 years of my experience learning how to, you know, be confident about that. It's always a challenge. So I don't know. I think that's one element with at least my side of having to have this be an economic importance. You know, it's my work and it's what pays the bill. But be able to take on an artistic aspect of it and then putting it out in the world and, you know, see if people open a box and say, hey, this isn't good, and then have to navigate this this like sense of judgment as well. So I don't know. I think it shapes me in a unique way, and I'm able to have that conversation and you know, uniqueness in the work that we do every single day.
I just have one question for you about that. Is I was looking at the body of things that you create for people and institutions, etc., and I'm wondering, what was the most unique project that you were asked to create?
Oh, that's a great question. I kind of always joke now that when people come in, I mean, we get inquiries for everything, you know, you know, some of my employees or my printers, they look at a job and they're like, what does this mean? And I'm like, you know what? I don't ask any more questions. There's the randomest things that we print, and, you know, it's cool to see the range of it. But, you know, the things that stick out to me are when people bring us projects that are like, hey, I have 15 colors that you have to print, or how do you take something that's not really screen printable and convert it to something that's screen printable? So those notable ones are, you know, the multicolor prints that have multiple layerings that have its challenges. But off the top of my head, I can't tell you the weirdest one I've done. I'll have to think about that.
You know, think about it. I'll get back with you. And Kestrel, I want you to tell us a little bit about, I tried to look up what risograph was, and what I can kind of encapsulate, and you'll have to correct me, is it's like a big Xerox machine in a way. And so you're a specialist in this type of process. So it's a, I don't know, I'm thinking of, you know, the old art historian John Berger and how he's, you know, his book on art that's reproducible is more valuable and more culturally important than art that isn't reproducible. And I was thinking about that as I was trying to figure out what the Rizzo print technician does. So can you tell me more?
Yeah, Elizabeth, I'm happy to talk about Rizzo, Rizograph. It's a technology that was released in Japan in the 1980s. And it's known as a duplicator or a mimeograph. Some people might be familiar with that term. It's meant to recreate an image over and over again. And I like to explain it, if everyone knows what screen printing is. similar to screen printing, but inside a photocopier. It is shaped like a photocopier, but prints in a similar way to screen printing. A screen inside the machine is lasered with holes of the design that you've sent it digitally or by the scanner bed, like an old photocopier. And that image is then printed one color at a time. The machines can either print one color or two colors at a time. But it was a technology that was invented for schools and churches. And, you know, they were used to, and they're still used today in businesses like car dealerships and some hospitals where they have to make the same form thousands and 10,000 times. They will use a Rizzo and you can duplicate and reprint this image. But as technologies move forward, these machines were discarded. And that's when artists picked them up and started utilizing them for printing artwork. What Rizzo is really famous for, and if you come to the fair, you'll see, is its vibrant colors. It uses a recycled rice bran as its ink and has many fluorescent and bright colors. And that's something that's not common in other print forms. It also has this element of being imperfect. This is ink being pushed through a screen. So, you know, it's going to have textures of the paper. It's going to have areas where it doesn't print evenly. And that lends it a very unique final form. I came up in printing from letterpress. And I like to think of Rizzograph as a, like a younger sibling of letterpress, a much more accessible and more fun and loose sibling that you're playing with. Letterpress is much more buttoned up, but if anyone's familiar with letterpress and understand the appeal of letterpress, I think they will really love Rizzograph as well.
I was looking to see here, Albert McCartney is a founder and director of Rizzo Studio Arts, and he's actually one of the members of the group that's putting on off-register the Santa Barbara Art Book and Print Fair. And interestingly enough, he's an official North American Rizzo sales and service person. And so there's, here again, it's why this show is going to be so interesting off-register, in my opinion, is because it's right there between the commercial and creative kind of, you know, division that people like to box things up in, you know. And I think basically, I think of the first computer printer, dating myself here, but the first computer printer I had was a Canon. And I remember the Canon service guy coming to my office, you know, because, you know, they would actually service these things. And Albert, I understand, is one of those kind of guys that services those machines. Do I have that right, Kestrel?
Well, actually, Albert does go to schools, but he has a technician, so one of which is me, and he runs Rizzo Studio Arts. And you're right that Rizzo Studio Arts represents a very interesting and wonderful intersection between commercial and kind of educational and, you know, artistic. It's a kind of a crossroad. Rizzo Studio Arts is also the main sponsor of the fair, and it's a very interesting company because most print distributors are working with very commercial, you know, non-artistic clients, but Albert and his team at Rizzo Studio Arts, or RSA as we call it, is working with universities all over Southern California, including my alma mater, Art Center, and Cal Arts, and you know, UCSB, SBCC, lots of different schools. So, you know, when Albert is working with educational institutions, he understands and values the artistic purpose of these machines. And yet at the same time, he works in the commercial distribution. So it's a very business-like environment, but he perfectly straddles both and is a champion for the arts from a commercial background. Yeah,
so. You know, Richard's giving us a sign we have to go to quick break. But one thing I want to talk about a little bit is you know, that what we're talking here about commerce and art and the mixture thereof, that the word is, you know, so important to what all of you do. And I noticed there's going to be a panel discussion saying with the titled Text is Practice. And I was thinking, as I was talking to myself about that, I was thinking of one of my favorite artists, John Baldessari, you know, who actually uses words as part of the composition, as the centerpiece of, you know, any composition that he did. And I found it super interesting. Ages ago, LACMA had a show that that John designed while he was still with us. And I vaguely knew him. I met him a couple of times, and I went to see his show. And on the ceiling, he had the freeways of Los Angeles. And I think it was a Magritte show. And he had the freeways of Los Angeles and all kinds of words. And I was thinking, oh, what a stroke of genius. Because, you know, those freeways, the words are launched on freeways, which can be books or print material. And I was thinking of that as I was looking at that lecture topic, Text is Practice. When we get back from the break, I want to talk about what that actually means, what text as practice means. And I know that you guys all have that as, you know, your bedrock of your creativity, that the word is closely involved with what you do. So I want to talk about that. And maybe we could just start and just go around the room. Kestrel and Garrett and Owen and Des can just talk about how the printed word, it becomes alive in a way with what you do. So Richard, let's go to quick break. We get back from the break. We're going to talk a little bit about why this is so important, the word as it's printed. And we're celebrating Off Register, the Santa Barbara Art Book and Print Fair, November 16th, one day, 11 to 6, at the Community Arts Workshop on Garden Street. This is a one of a kind and the first of its kind, and I hope it's going to take off and be many of its kind, because I think it's just other cities have such a thing. Maybe not as unique, because we have such intellectual powerhouses here, and be thanks to, you know, our universities. But this is, I think, just remarkable that we're able to, that you guys were able to pull this off and pull it together. So don't turn that dial back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and we are speaking with the panel here that have pulled together an amazing show, Off Register, the Santa Barbara Art Book and Print Fair. And this is one day only, November 16th at the Community Arts Workshop from 11 to 6 p.m. There's all sorts of really interesting panel discussions. There's all kinds of things you can purchase. There's things you can watch being done. It's a unique and incredible opportunity for our community to think about what the word does, the printed word, the printed image, what it does, how it's created. And before we jump to break, I wanted to talk with our panel here. There's a talk that's going to be happening called Text is Practice, and that will be at the fair. You can join that panel discussion if you go to the fair, Off Register, for example. I want to know what that means, what text as practice means. And Kestrel, will you tell us what you think it means?
Yes, Elizabeth. So I think text as practice, I would see it in a different direction than probably what Alex Lucas is going to present in his panel. But in my area of work, I think it's interesting to see, can text be art on its own? Is, you know, when you're a graphic designer as well, is that art? And I think I always bring that back as a commercial artist, of this tension between what is written and what is art, especially in commercial world today, even with, you know, a lot of brands focusing on, you know, bringing more artistic elements to their advertisement and that sort of arena. So I think that from that perspective, you know, is that art, is that text? So is that sort of a tension between the two in terms of Texas practice? In the panel discussion, the description is actually a roundtable discussion that focuses on can the written world be considered a core component of visually centered creative practices? And from that question, I tend to agree that yes, it can. But as a commercial artist, I have a much broader definition of what art and what interpretation can be for that.
Fantastic way to explain it. And, you know, that's an important distinction, you know, that people, well, if it's, that's kind of what I was asking about, what is a book, when I was talking about that, it's amazing to think about the printed word actually, you know, living off the page in a way that that Kersal's describing. Let's see, Garrett, what do you think about that? What is text as practice for you? I bet you you're pretty close to that because of the commercial branch of your business.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like very interpretive. I'm interested in seeing what that panel is going to be like. And I think you could look at just that phrase and dissect that and in many different ways. And, you know, there's a commercial aspect of it that I see. If I'm going more like the theoretical route or historical route, you know, text and print has been historically, you know, very important politically and, you know, the democratization of voice and information, you know, dating back to, you know, here's my nerd philosophy side of me coming out with like Walter Benjamin's essay. That was a very important thing for me in college and looking at the work of art in the age of mechanical reproduction and kind of discussing, you know, the discourse of what, you know, print and the reproduction practices are. So, you know, in the theoretical side of like what I do, which is maybe not so much what I see on a daily basis, the ability of putting, you know, text in print form, you know, allows for the multiplicity and the democratization of information, you know, taking the aura away from, you know, a specific art source. And so I like to just like sit and think about the power of print in that way, and how that's, you know, scaled over time, the Gutenberg press in the 1400s and how that scaled into the modernization of print. And just, I could live and see how, just how information in mass production works. So for us, you know, in t-shirts, you know, everyone has a message. So the ability that we can, you know, take a screen, a substrate and print it, and we could print thousands and thousands and thousands with a single screen, and be able to multiply that. And if you just think about, you know, these boxes of t-shirts go to an event that's given to every single person that then is sent off on their way, and how long that shirt lives, you know, in the closet or worn over and over, over time, over years. It's just like that one thing, that one idea that we took and printed for a client, for example, or for our own work, lives on in a very unique way. So I don't know, the translation of text in that way can be seen very powerfully. And yeah.
I tell you, it's really funny that you should mention the t-shirts. I had a, you know, some of the fire loss appraising that I have done, people that collect t-shirts from various concerts. I had a major collector up there in Paradise that lost his collection in the campfire. And some of these t-shirts from some of these concerts are really expensive. You know, some of the they're highly collectible. And he had a number of, you know, t-shirts that were going on the market for well over $600 a piece. It was nuts, I thought. But I hear what you're saying. The other thing I wanted to mention, you know, talk about the 15th century, how do I explain this? So Martin Luther is taking advantage of the printing press in a funny way, instead of, because most people that he's trying to get interested in kind of rebelling against the Catholic Church, they can't read text, but they certainly can respond to the visual image. And so the first texts that the printing press was actually doing was not necessarily printed. It was imagery. And I find that interesting. You know, it was created to do print work, but it started off its life in imagery. So how interesting. I wonder if Owen can talk a little bit about text as practice in your world, Owen.
Yeah, you know, I'm so glad you asked about this, Elizabeth, because I've been thinking about this a lot, actually, as I worked on a new comic for Off Register. For my discipline in comics, text and image are combined on the page, right? You have the characters and the drawings and text in word balloons. And so you're seeing both together, but you're also seeing a fluid spectrum between the two, because drawings in comics are text-like. They're made of the same material as text, from lines, and they are so abstracted that they're almost like glyphs themselves. I actually want to read you something that Chris Ware said. Chris Ware is a cartoonist. He said, "Cartooning is not really drawing at all, but a complicated pictographic language intended to be read, not really seen." So I think that's really powerful. And it's something I'm thinking about as I work on my craft of comics and telling stories with images.
I'll tell you another interesting kind of intersection here. So one of the celebrity client of mine that was an actor that portrayed one of the Marvel comic superheroes. And he collected his own image, as a superhero, the maquettes, the sculptures, the toys, the whatever it was that was being produced in his image as the character he portrayed. He collected those. And he had a collection of hundreds and hundreds of pieces that were he as a character, a Marvel character, a comic character. And of course, that was a terrific loss, because some of those, you know, just think of the kind of people that buy these things at Comic-Con, for example. Some of these pieces are extremely valuable to a certain group of people. And this is a world that I wasn't familiar with at all. And so, yeah, I hear what you're saying. And Des, I wonder if you can tell me, what's text as practice for you? And as an archivist, I'm only imagining what you're going to say.
So for me, there's a couple different sides to this. There's the like librarian, memory worker, archivist side to this that understands how printed materials are not just archival, but how zines, especially as an artist that works specifically within a medium that's meant to be shared, and that's kind of part of a creative community that's anti-commercial. Thinking about text as practice is much more grounded for me in how to invite someone into new ideas using zines as that format. And so, you know, shout out to the cartoonists. I'm not a doodler. I work with doodlers to make zines happen. But I think a lot about the balance between images and text, especially when creating zines about like research or educational kind of DIY topics, having that creativity to make it cute and informative is also part of the practice of making information accessible. So for me, a lot of this kind of circulates in the same way. And just to kind of touch back on what Garrett was talking about, like the radical roots of zines and not just DIY and punk movements, but going back into scrapbooking cultures and literary cultures and writers creating spaces to publish their own works during the Harlem Renaissance. The kind of basic themes that come into zines and what zines are now actually go back like way farther than we usually get to know. And so connecting to these other kind of like radical practices of how communities document themselves, how individuals document ourselves, and how we choose to share that with others, that's kind of like the text as practice that I'm thinking about in this room right now.
You know, I can also tell you that a number of clients over the years have collected, and this is, you know, the part of me that just loves the archival work, they have collected women's scrapbooks that date back as, you know, early as the 17th and 18th century. It was a way that a feminine voice could be heard and actually published in a way. I mean, making a scrapbook. So, and it's wonderful slices of time and personality and historicism and all of that. And I haven't even put that together before you said that to me, that the scrapbook is the natural predecessor. So yeah, fantastic comment. Richard's giving us a sign. We have to go to quick break. When we get back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about another topic that's going to be discussed at the panel discussion. And I think Kestrel is going to moderate this discussion. And I want to talk about what she's planning to do. It's a topic called Current Impressions, the Modern Printmaker and Entrepreneur. And this is a large panel. Garrett is going to be on that panel as well. And I want Kestrel's thoughts on that before we have to say goodbye for the day. So just another shout out. Off Register, the Santa Barbara Art Book and Print Fair, November 16th, one day only, 11 to 6 at the Community Arts Workshop. There's something for everybody, some things to collect, some things to enjoy, some things to see, some things to experience hands-on. And then also, if you're intellectually interested, there's some wonderful panel discussions as well, as you can hear by some of these really important thinkers talking about the intersection between print and image, a fantastic intersection. Don't turn that dial. Back in a minute.
Paperback writer.
I've been up late, I've been drinking too much, going insane, dreaming about you, love, you got that thing that I can't explain. And there ain't a thing that I wouldn't do, love, if you wrote books, I would start a book club, I would just hang on every word you say. Come give me the run around. Pick me up and put me down as long as you stay. Cause I could get used to how soft and sweet it sounds when you say my name. And honestly,
okay. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. The panel discussion we're having today is with four wonderful artists and thinkers, and they are part of the group that's produced a show for us called Off Register. It's a Santa Barbara art book and print fair. Other cities, notably Los Angeles, for example, has a huge event like this, and I'm so thrilled that Santa Barbara's pulled it off. And Kestrel, I understand that you were instrumental in thinking about this particular show, and that it was sort of a light bulb that went off one day. And you are going to moderate a discussion called The Modern Printmaker and Entrepreneur. So making a career in the print media field, the working with print media, and then you are kind enough to open the discussion up to the audience with question and answers. So tell me a little bit, we have like 2 minutes, but tell me about that talk quickly.
Yeah, so this panel talk, I think it's a lot more grounded in terms of the topic, but it's really an exploration of four different artists, screen printers and risograph printers and comic book publishers, on why they pursue print and what makes them want to be in this world when we often hear the word print is dead. Is print dead? You know, and how are we moving forward in this arena, and why is it important to keep working in print? And you know, I think that it's also a very educational panel. I work with students, and I think a lot of them are interested in learning about, is there a career, is there a life in this field? Is it dead? You know, but it is not dead. I can reassure everyone of that. It is thriving. It's very creative, and it's constantly having just new technology and new perspectives being brought into it. And I think that in this panel, with a variety of artists I have and work in a variety of print mediums, you'll be able to hear about their impressions as contemporary artists who are making a commercial living off of their art as print artists.
A quick shout out about some of the demonstrations and workshops. One of the ones I'm looking forward to is the pinback. So, you know, to a button, like a campaign button, you'll be able to make your own graphic circular pinback and creating a statement. I can only think what I would love to say on such a button. Also, there's going to be screen print demonstrations and Rizzo demonstrations, and great news, library card registration. How wonderful is that? Thank you, guys. I look forward to seeing you at Off Register, the Santa Barbara Art Book and Print Fair on November 16th. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah,
thanks, Elizabeth.
Thank you. So fun.